Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
As you can see, I'm Rob Pheasant and I'm Head of Skills for Life and Employment, and I work for Learning and Skills Improvement Service, and my remit covers apprenticeships, improving the quality of apprenticeship provision, but also the functional skills element, so in other words, maths, English and ESOL. Just to give you a little bit of background then, I started life in industry. I worked in industry for a while and then I went into teaching. And I taught in a land-based environment, which my colleague over there is familiar with. So I taught things like horticulture and agriculture, all those sort of things. And the way I got involved with learners who had got difficulty with maths and English was we'd got many, many learners coming through our doors that could not complete their vocational qualifications, they couldn't hold down jobs, they couldn't progress, mainly because they've got poor skills in literacy and numeracy, maths and English. So I soon found, as part of my job as a vocational specialist, if you like, having to actually teach those skills in a vocational context to get them to learn them. And it had very great, it had real positive results on encouraging those learners to progress and achieve the skills that they needed. To cut a long story short, when we got inspected, it was at a time when the inspector was very keen to see how maths and English was embedded into the curriculum, and we got grade one provision for that. So I was seconded to the Department of Education, and I had 3 years in the department working on things like whole organisation approaches to maths and English and things like developing resources, etc. I've been at QIA, previously QIA, which since 2006, and that transformed into ELSIS, leading on this type of work. So it's really interesting for me to be able to come along today and listen to what you've got to say. I don't want to talk to you for the next half an hour. I want to listen to you to find out the challenges that you're having, and maybe there are people in here already that have actually got to grips with functional skills. So I know it's quite challenging at the moment for a lot of people. So that's about where we are. We've got about half an hour. We've got half an hour on the agenda. If people want longer than that, I don't mind talking to you as long as you want to, but I'll plan for about half an hour if that's okay. Is that all right? Mm-hmm. Just to give you a flavour then, we've been working very closely with ALP, we did a little bit of background survey work going back to 2011, and we found that there were very few providers that, this is based on the ALP survey, that embraced functional skills in a big way. So as you can see there, there were 62%. Well, at that point, we're delivering 100% key skills. So they've made no effort at all to start delivering functional skills. Obviously, you can see there's a little bit of positive news there. There was 8% delivering mainly functional skills, and 8% were delivering totally functional skills. So there was some activity going on. And I think the main reason for that, and I think perhaps you might have some opinion on this, is that perhaps a lot of providers thought it was going to go away. I think there was a lot of pressure on government at the time to say we won't deliver functional skills and it might disappear. Is that true or not? Yeah? Yeah? Okay. No?
Yeah, there was some denial, wasn't there?
Yeah. Would it be helpful if you knew where each other was from? Would that help? So that we knew. Do you want to just say, Jed, where are you from?
I'm Jed Layden, Business Development Manager at Oldham College. The lady missing, Cheryl Wiseman, is Director of Skills and Enterprise for Oldham College.
I'm Lisa Lawrence from Wayne's College, the MVQ Apprenticeship Manager.
I'm Chris Middleton, Workforce Development Manager Apprenticeships at Wayne's Youth College.
I'm Steve Gerkin, Hull College, and I'm Head of Performance and Compliance.
Sue Ferguson from Manchester Solutions, and I'm Subcontracting Manager.
Helen Smith,
Hello, I'm Jenny Schledder. I'm actually from Consolidated PR. So we're a PR agency, but we have a specialist division looking after skills and sort of business, training in business. So I work for SEMTA, for example.
Okay.
I know Bill Twigg, but also I've done work in the past for BAE Systems, promoting their apprenticeship programme. So that's kind of my interest. I'm a bit off everybody else's. But
no, that's fine. Yeah. Thanks very much. Okay, we've done a more recent survey, and as you can see, this is only just being done a few weeks ago, and we have got a significant movement. So in other words, the number that we're delivering, 100% key skills, has dropped by 21%. So the 21% have started to deliver functional skills, but there's only 1% made a full transition. And 41%, this was a survey of just over 100 providers. And that was a mixture. It was a mixture of training providers, it was a mixture of colleges. So we've still got, at this point in April, May, 41% still delivering key skills. So does that fit with where you all are at this moment in time? Does that seem a fairly realistic position to be in? Yeah? No?
I think we've made a good transition where the learners come into college, where the provision's fully in the workplace. That's the area where we're
So the learners are on full-time provision?
The learners are in employment.
In employment, right, okay.
Yeah, they're in full-time employment, but that's for the traditional model, is the learners come into college for a day a week, and during that day
they do the functional skills,
certificate and the key skills. And where we've flipped from the key skills to the functional skills during that day, we've done workflows across the board within the college with good success.
Yeah.
The area of problem we're having is not the area of problem, the challenging area is where the employer will not release the learner for the day to come into college, so all the training is done
in the workplace.
Where there's often only one or two learners in that workplace.
Okay.
So therefore, we're very good at delivering the technical certificate in there, and we've got a good history of the key skills, but transferring that over to what's the more perceived difficult area of the functional skills is proving challenging.
Yeah. Does that sound about ring true, that message, or no?
Well, you were saying college.
We're having difficulty incorporating it into the college day. For example, our electrical one apprenticeship is a difficult one. The day for the technical certificate isn't long enough anyway for the amount of vocational requirement they've got. So in order to incorporate potentially three functional skills within that day as well, it's an impossibility for us. So we're having to look at options like front loading. So we bring them in for 4 weeks before they start on the technical certificate, and they do as much as possible then, and then we bring them in during half terms, etc., some holidays, or we lengthen the college day, which isn't ideal because then they're doing functional skills at the end of the day.
Okay.
And they don't want to be doing it.
Okay.
And we can lose them. So this is the we've been delivering it for the past year, and we've been it's been very ad hoc, and we found it quite messy, not very cost effective.
Why has it been ad hoc then? Give me a clue as to why it's been ad hoc.
Well, I came into this job in September, so they tried to timetable it in during the summer, ready for the start of the academic year, and it hadn't worked. I think the staff weren't ready and weren't embracing it, to be honest. So we've been literally trying to sort of fly by the seat of our pants this year with it, and we've been doing it in half terms, etc. So I'm trying to sort out a plan for the next academic year that's going to work for as many vocational areas as possible and be cost effective, but I'm struggling to get the perfect and ultimate
model,
kind of model for
that's a regularly heard story. Have you got anywhere it's working well?
Our hairdressing provision seems to be working quite well. They've accommodated it, and I think that might be to do with the staff that are involved as much as anything. But they've kind of embraced it that it's part of the, they've front loaded it, and they're doing one functional skill during the day. So one function of skills front loaded, another one's incorporated into the
okay.
day list.
Right.
But the functional skills, in order for them to go on to the advanced apprenticeship, it will be a pre-requirement that they've achieved and attended the front-loaded sessions before they've gone to level 3
right.
apprenticeship. So
okay.
we've got a bit of a bargaining to
Okay. Has anybody gone for it or started to do it and found it was complete disaster? No? No?
Our subcontractors are finding it difficult because they, in the last year, have had the transition from training to going to apprenticeships, so they've only just got their head around that, and they haven't really got the skill level to deliver
right.
the functional
okay.
skills, and the money that's attached to it isn't enough to you know, do specialist support, really, or put
right.
you know, a group together where somebody might deliver it and take the lead on it.
Okay.
The money just isn't there.
Right.
And it's then not embedded in.
It would be the same as that, definitely.
Right.
Exactly that camp.
Right. Because we haven't got a long time, what I'll do is I'll just share with you some of the things that some of the providers have said to us, both those that have made it work and both those that perhaps haven't made it work. So I can give you some of the sort of things that we know have made a difference. And I think in the time we've got, that's all I can do. But what I can do is I can signpost you to opportunities that ELSIS is giving for training and to resources that we've made available. And that's what I'll do in the time we've got. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously if any of you want to stop and talk to me after the half an hour, I'm quite happy to do that. The stories that you're telling me are quite familiar. We started funding through ALP what we call special interest groups. So we brought together groups of providers to listen to them. And if I go back to the 6 months ago, I expected to go to that meeting and get a really a bashing to say, you know, this will never work, whatever. And it was quite the opposite, actually. Although providers were having the similar story, giving a similar story to you are, there were some of them, and I mean some, you've got the 8% up there, that had really taken it on board. And the things that they were telling us is where they'd actually embraced it, and the organisation had embraced it, and I think that's one of the key messages here as well. It's got to be a whole organisation approach to functional skills. It can't be, I don't think, an ad hoc, I think that was the word you used.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter whether it's key skills, it doesn't matter whether it's basic skills, unless the actual organisation takes it on board, it will not work, very well. So those people that had really made a fist of it had actually embraced it and taken it across the organisation. Now, in some cases, they had seen a dip while they embedded it into the organisation. But after that, and I'll come to the sort of things that they put in place to make it happen in a minute, they'd started to see quite a rise in completion rates and achievement rates. And the sort of things they were telling us is that when learners got used to it, they liked functional skills. They could actually see the relevance of them, the importance of them, and how they actually linked into their real life jobs, their lives, etc. And when staff had got their heads around, they said were saying exactly the same things. Okay, so there was a lot of positives, a real lot of positives, but it did require a significant shift by the organisation to embrace a model that actually worked for that organisation. And there were some key elements that had to be in place, which I'll talk to you about. We could sit here all day and debate whether it's the right thing for us to have to do is deliver maths and English skills that should have been learnt perhaps 2 or 3 years ago, but that's not, you know, we're not here to do that. And I think, as Jed was saying earlier on, once learners actually see the relevance of doing it in a vocational situation, they learn those skills anyway, so we know it does work. So I don't think we can argue that it's not the right thing for us to do, it's just the challenge of actually doing it. I've heard all day really today is about the importance of actually getting employers on board as well. And again, if we listen to all the reports that come out, particularly from CBI, they quote time and time again, employers keep quoting, the reason we can't take on young people is because they haven't got the basic skills, whether they're getting out of bed on time, whether communication skills, number skills. So we know employers value the skills, but I think it's actually getting employers involved in the actual delivery mechanism to make them also become part of delivering maths and English skills in a workplace concept. And I know that's not easy. So, if I sort of go through some of the things that we know providers are telling us that make a difference. And I think this first one here, this senior management support, can't be underestimated. And I think the reason that's got to be there is because some people in your organisation will say, this is not my job. Right? I mean, how many times have you heard that? This is not my job. But, and I, you know, going back to my life as a manager in a college many years ago, I was faced with the challenge of managing staff that said, this is not my job, I'm here to teach plumbing, I'm here to teach hairdressing, whatever, not my job. But I don't think we should underestimate, again, the powerful role vocational tutors and employers can play in actually motivating learners to learn those skills. And why? The reason I say that is because somebody that's teaching construction or whatever it is understands why that learner needs those skills and where they're important. And although I'm not suggesting they teach them, they might not have to teach them those skills. They should be giving the learners the opportunity to develop those skills in another context. And that is one of the important things with functional skills. That learner has got to learn skills in context to be able to apply them in different situations. So the learner's got to learn problem-solving skills. It's not just a matter of knowing how to multiply and add up or whatever it is, they've got to actually apply those skills. And that is the big difference between functional skills and some of the other things that have gone before. Because when the learner has to do the test, they have to actually develop. If they've developed those skills in hairdressing, it might be that the questions on the test relate those skills to bricklaying. So they've got to be able to transfer those skills. And I think that's the importance of actually managing functional skills in the whole organisation environment. So when I'm talking about clear policy and strategy, I'm talking about how functional skills sits into the organisation's strategic plan. How does it fit in with curriculum area plans? How does it fit in with the organisation's improvement plan? How do you measure the impact of poor literacy and numeracy on the achievement of other skills? And how do you know whether those skills are being taught? Because what you need to remember now, and I'm sure you're all well aware of this, is through the new Ofsted framework for inspection, you've got three key headings now. One of those headings is teaching, learning and assessment. Okay, and a key focus of inspection will be looking at how you've addressed those learners' needs. So if a learner is on a programme that requires them to develop their English and math skills, you've got to be actually showing that you're doing that in a place and at a time in a way that suits that learner. And they'll be looking at that sort of delivery. So that is going to be a key focus in inspection. You can't get away from that. So it's got to be built into the whole organisation development plan. And when I say that is, and I'll go on to this, staff awareness and skills audit, how much do your staff know about functional skills? Now, obviously staff at varying levels will need to know more than others, but I think, again, we've heard time and time again here, the relationship between, or building up relationships with schools, building up relationships with employers, building up relationships with parents. Now, you know, when different staff are coming across different groups of people, they'll need to understand what functional skills means to that learner. And it's up to all staff to actually have some part in play in selling the importance of functional skills. Okay? Now, the skills audit is really important for you because you will have some staff that probably, or may have, how many of you have got specialist teachers in maths and English? Yes. You have, okay.
We're actually looking to train applied assessors, to be honest.
Okay, what are you training them in, though?
In the Kettles qualification.
Okay, and how is that going to prepare them for teaching maths and English?
They're going to do the functional skills themselves.
Ah, okay.
And then do the...
Right, that's a really good point. Again, I was talking to a provider the other day that's put every member of staff through a functional skills test so that they know what it involves. So that when they're actually talking to parents, learners, employers, they've got a good indication of what it means. So I think that's a really good start, is to put staff so that they know what it means. And then, obviously, if you've got specialist tutors, not everybody needs a specialist teaching qualification in maths and English. You're not going to have the staff available to do that. Is that another issue for you, having staff with the right skills?
Yes.
So where are you going to find those staff from?
it's something that some of them have got them, but others, where they might only have, it might be a very small organisation, right? Probably five staff.
Yeah.
So we are looking at sort of pooling, but again, it comes back to this money situation. And is it viable? Is it cost effective?
Let me just give a bit of good news, and I had this hot off the press the other day. The SFA, I understand, are doing some shadow funding between June 12 and January 13. To working with providers to look at what it means, all right, what it means to deliver functional skills. So, not all is lost in that respect. I think SFA are quite, you know, aware that the amount of funding isn't massive, and at the same time, this is an important government agenda. So, you know, watch this space, okay? Just going back to your staff skills then. It may be a case that if you haven't got any staff that are qualified at all, it may be that you've got to work with other providers and pool resources, and I think that's something that you'll have to think about. But also, is there an opportunity to grow on some of your own staff? You say yes. I mean,
yeah.
We work with some employers. Some of them are large. One of them, the largest in logistics operations in on the planet. Some of them are 200 strong, but they have several sites. You can't go in and deliver training in one site because it's local to your college and then turn down all the other sites.
No.
The problem we had was we send an assessor out, then we send a tutor out because the assessor's not a tutor contract-wise, so he does the technical certificate. And then we send the key skills member of staff out to deliver. So you're sending three members of staff. How can that be cost effective?
No, no.
So what we decided to do was realign the assessor contracts. Sort them out. And we're dealing with HR at the moment. But that was the biggest problem from a college prior where I used to work. They expected employers to send their staff for key skills in the college. And if they refused to do it, they couldn't do it. So they lost shedloads of work.
Right.
You can't expect an employer to take people out of the workplace.
No.
So that's what we've done. So we're designing a member of staff now. And I'm sick of hearing I'm only an assessor.
Yeah.
Because that assessor is the most important
right.
person
Absolutely.
To the employer
Absolutely.
Than any business development manager.
But that, I think, again, the times and times we've heard today about that employer relationship, okay?
He's kick.
Absolutely. So, in other words, that assessor may have skills that you're not aware of that can help support the delivery of maths and English in the workplace, okay? And it's actually thinking about, well, what can I do to enhance that individual? And it may be that, you know, there's an opportunity there for training where they can provide on-the-job help to some of those trainees that are in the workplace. And I'll come on to the model in a minute because that again is important. Some of you mentioned delivering functional skills up front. Some of you may have gone for an embedded model. There may be different ways that you want to do it to actually fit in with the way you want to deliver the curriculum. But also, if you're working with employers, as you very rightly say, they're not going to be happy if those trainees are out of the workplace for long periods of time. Okay, so that is important. But going back to your staff awareness and skills audit, look at what skills your staff have got. And when I say let's focus on the positive here, you may have some staff when you start looking, even vocational tutors. I started life as a vocational tutor and I trained to be a numeracy teacher in the end because I was really interested in it. But what you've got to say is, well, okay, are you interested in doing this? Have you got good numeracy skills yourself? Do you see that this is a way you could develop your own career if you wanted to do that? And it may be that once you start looking across your skills base, you have got staff that need to improve their own personal skills in maths and English. And you've got a question, well, how are they functioning in the workplace if they haven't got those skills themselves? So it's an opportunity to look at your staff skills as well and their role that they'll play in delivering functional skills. And that's why I say it really is a whole organisation approach, this, to trying to actually put an infrastructure and skills in place to deliver. Because the way I view this is if those learners aren't improving those skills and they're not achieving them, how the hell can they actually achieve their vocational qualifications, they won't achieve their apprenticeship frameworks, and they won't actually progress. We've heard a lot about progression today as well onto high-level apprenticeships programs. They won't be able to progress onto high-level programs without those vital underpinning skills. So I think the organisation has got to think very carefully where it actually needs to position itself to deliver apprenticeships and within that the functional skills qualification.
Can I just ask, if they're already delivering key skills, albeit maybe under duress, but they are doing it because, you know, they've been trained again, as we said before, and then they've come on to into apprenticeships and they've had training and they're now doing, they've got a portfolio and they know what they're doing in each occupational area for that, and then they do do the online tests and they've got those on laptops and go out and do them in the workplace. I have no problem in the majority of the people, you know, most people do pass the test, providing the initial assessment's been correct or whatever, so they're getting through the test. But our time of success has been affected by getting the key skills portfolios completed and the right standard, because they're back into that too. We've got quite a few national contracts, so they're all over the place, and then they're coming back and then they've got to go back for a bit more work, etc., etc. If we went over to functional skills, there is no portfolio, is that we've just got to pass the, you know, we have got to pass the test. There's more test time and more time in preparing them for the tests in the first instance.
Yep.
Could people who are delivering key skills now, or what my question is really, what extra support do you need to give to them for them to be able to deliver this?
Okay.
And is it more difficult for them to do that?
It's more difficult.
It's more difficult. I think two parts of the story, really. I don't know what qualifications your staff have got, but somebody that in the past has been teaching what I call literacy, language, numeracy, basic skills qualifications, there's been a requirement that they have a specialist teaching qualification in maths or English. Okay, there's never been any requirement for somebody that's teaching key skills to have a specialist qualification, and neither is there for functional skills. Okay, now you've got to argue that somebody that's teaching maths and English needs to be qualified.
Based on standard.
Yeah.
We've had the level above for key skills, and people who are teaching it have got to pass the level above.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we've said,
which is
what
benchmark.
Which is a good benchmark, but definitely I think it's good for them to do the functional skills themselves.
Having said that, what we do find is a lot of people, although they've not had, a lot of organisations, although there's been no compulsion, you know, requirement to say that you've got to have qualified staff teach, they have done that. They've done that because they've recognised that to get those learners up to that level does need qualified staff. And that's going to be even more so because functional skills is more complex, there's no doubt about it. You've actually got to teach that learner how to apply those skills and use them in different contexts. So you've got to teach the underpinning skills and then teach them how to apply them. So in my opinion, it does require staff that are, you know, have got good skills themselves in maths and English, but also can teach it as well. Okay. What I would do is the awareness raising bit is actually get them to understand what's involved in passing a functional skills qualification. As I say, the starting point might be get them to do the qualification themselves so that they understand what's needed. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I think, you know, what you will have, I'm sure you've got, have you got qualified maths and English tutors in the organisation already?
We've got two within our workforce development, one Skills for Life tutor who's got a qualification, so they've got a key skills coordinator, but then we're expecting, so they can support the assessors, and they do at the moment, where they have somebody struggling with the key skills, we would then send them out to work with them, or if we've got somebody in the college who can't manage in a group, then I'll send them in for one-to-one, and then I would normally get people up to the correct level.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously good opportunities there if you do some cascade training in your own organisation as well and get some teamwork going. I mean, I'll come on to the delivery model because that's crucial. I think what everybody said to us is this robust initial diagnostic assessment is key. So in other words, what are you actually doing to find out whether the learners have got skill gaps? Are they on the right course? And if they are on the right course, what skills do you need to teach them to progress? All right? And again, if you look at the thematic reports that's come out of Ofsted, particularly around numeracy, for instance, one of the key things that came that's come out of that is that learners do not have a good, strong initial diagnostic assessment. So in other words, the teaching of, whether it's maths or English, is not at the right level. It's not actually filling the gaps that they need to, or the skill gaps they need to develop. And it's not actually taught in a context that's meaningful to the learner. So is there an individual learning plan? Clearly, does it reflect where their starting point? Does it reflect clearly what skills they need to learn? And when I say need to learn, they'll have skills that they need to learn to pass their functional skills qualification. They'll have skills that they need to function in the workplace. And they'll have skills that they need to function in their own lives. And if you're not really looking at that learner holistically, we've missed the point, haven't we? So I think that starting point is crucial. And obviously that links in then to your initial advice and guidance, which again we've heard a lot about today. You know, what are we actually advising the learner to do? You know, and that again requires those IAG staff to understand what it means, what functional skills means. Again, I don't know whether you've looked at what's available in terms of diagnostic assessment tools, but there are lots of them out there, lots of commercially produced ones. And again, you know, that is up to you really to find one that suits your needs. But I'll give you some links to our website, OLSI's website, where we've got information on initial advice and guidance and assessment, which could help you. So I think that's another key part of it.
Can we still use things like BKSB for doing that?
BKSB, lots of people.
Yeah.
It's not primarily designed for functional skills, but it is a literacy, language,
yeah,
numeracy diagnostic assessment.
It's really used for key skills and, yeah, diagnostics.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah. I think what a lot of people seem to fail to remember is that the functional skills standards are based on the core curriculum for teaching. Are you all aware of the core curriculum, the maths and English core curriculum? That goes right from milestone 1 to milestone 7, then entry 3 to entry 1 to level 2. All those little chunks of learning in there are all underpinning functional skills. And when you do an initial diagnostic assessment, it will pinpoint which bits of learning the learner needs to learn. Okay? So what I'm talking about here is all you're doing to start with, you're doing some sort of initial assessment that says your learner is at level 1 or level 2, and then the diagnostic bit is actually saying, well, okay, if the learner's at level 1 and they're working to level 2, where are the skills gaps? What is it that learner needs to get to level 2? What do I need to teach them? It may not be everything, it may be just little bits of it. And unless you've done that, you know, you could be teaching the learner lots of things they already know. So that initial diagnostic assessment, again, is a crucial piece of the jigsaw to make sure you are teaching the learner what they need and at the right level. Going on to the curriculum then, what, where, how and who. So it goes about, do we deliver some in the workplace? Is functional skill delivered up front? And if that's the case, how are we going to manage it? How are we going to manage this curriculum with both the resources we've got, when you've looked at the staff resources, you've looked at whether you've got access to appropriate facilities, particularly workplace facilities, and then you've got to think, well, how am I actually going to deliver that within the resources I've got available? And when I put who on there, you've got whole curriculum teams here, and we've got very, very clear evidence to suggest that where whole staff teams are involved in delivering, it makes it far more meaningful for the learner, and the learner is been given opportunities all the time to develop those skills. So what I'm talking about here, and you know, you neatly described there, you've got some specialist staff, which are obviously there to teach purely maths and English, but you've got over here employers, you've got vocational tutors and assessors. So what part are they going to play in this whole curriculum? Because we're talking about a whole curriculum approach, hopefully, here. So vocational tutors, although they may not be there to teach maths and English, what they can do is they can easily pinpoint where that learner needs to develop those skills in their curriculum. So if they are delivering construction, they know exactly where that learner needs to use maths. They know exactly where that learner needs to use English. And they can actually give them opportunities to develop those skills. So when they're out developing a site plan for a building, where are the numeracy skills coming into that? Let's show them how to multiply within that vocational context so that they can develop those skills. So when I'm talking about a whole organisation approach here, I'm talking about building up a scheme of work where both the specialist tutor and a vocational tutor share expertise. So and it goes back to the specialist tutor knowing a little bit about construction, if you like, so that they can make their teaching relate to construction, if that's the case. Going back to the vocational tutor, okay, what are the math skills I need to give this learner the opportunity to develop? And I think if you can start to put a model together like that, it spreads the load and it's giving learners an opportunity to develop those skills all the time. And how many times again have we heard today about employers taking ownership? And I know that's not easy to do. I know what a touch that is, but if the employer needs to be part of the programme, we heard about employers being part of initial assessment this morning, if that employer knows that that learner is coming to them and they have got a need to develop numeracy skills, I'm sure there's an opportunity there for that employer to be involved with giving them opportunities to do that. And I think most of them, if they knew that, they would be interested enough to be able to do it because they could see the opportunities there is in the workplace to do it. And I think that, you know, it's this raising awareness, isn't it? And I've got their problem solving opportunities. Again, where can we actually build that into the learning? Not just straight, okay, today we're going to teach construction or whatever. How can we actually build in situations where that learner can expand their skills? I put on there choosing an awarding organisation. I think that's really, really important. You need an awarding organisation that's going to meet your needs. You really do. You're shaking your head, and yours isn't, I take it. Right. I had somebody similar the other day. Right. And what they did... Pardon?
Sitting girls, do they
have? I can't comment on the best. What I can tell you, though...
They're not very good.
You have that conversation between... I'm not here to knock award anybody. I think what you might want to do, and I was talking to quite a big provider the other day, and what they'd done is they'd put their provision out to tender. So they'd said, okay, this is what I want from an awarding body. Okay? And they'd said to half a dozen of them, this is what I want, can you match this? And you know, you've got things in there about costs, you've got testing windows, you've got flexibility. Awarding bodies need to give you support. What support are they giving you? What training are they giving you? And a lot of them are doing that for absolutely nothing. So ask them this question and say, look, you know, I've got an opportunity here to bring a lot of business your way, because that's what it is, you're paying for it. Put it out to tender, ask them. So I think the awarding body is absolutely crucial. You know, find the best one to suit you. I think there's about 15 at the moment that are delivering or offering functional skills qualifications. And that number is increasing. So I think, you know, if you're not satisfied with what you're getting, you know, tell them. And then say, well, you know, if you're not going to provide me with this, I might go somewhere else.
Mm. And some of the problem was it then waiting for the results as well, because you have to wait. But the one, I just can't remember now when the coordinator, you're asking me what did I know about it. My coordinator was doing some research and she said, come and look at one that she was doing the other day. And she seemed to think that you could get the results pretty well on some straight away. Now, whether that's right or wrong, I don't know.
You'd have to check.
She was leading you to believe that, which would be much better if you were with an employer.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
Could do, if English was in three parts, I think she was telling you, but you could do it. You would know then, you know, if they passed that or not, rather than sort of travelling away, waiting 6 weeks or whatever, and then having to go back and put a plan together, you're going to lose a lot of time.
Yeah.
Whereas if you do know more quickly, and if you can, you know, at the moment we book key skills, and then it's valid for 30 days, so you can go and do the test. Obviously, that gives you flexibility if you're travelling a long way, which we are. So those sort of things would be really important. So that's a good point. So we could actually say the things we need, and then see who comes back with those.
I think so, and I mean, I know it has been a real challenge for awarding organisations to get something together quite quickly. So, and they are developing all the time. They are making things more simpler. and getting certainly better at providing a more responsive feedback to learners taking tests.
You need to go.
All right, well, nice to meet you both.
Yeah, you
okay. Are you all right for another 5 minutes if I carry on?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll stop if you want me to, but I just want two things.
Thank you. See you again.
Okay. I've talked about employer engagement, and I don't underestimate the challenges there are there. If I just tell you what you may want to look at then, because I know we are running out of time, there is a functional skill starter kit on the Excellence Gateway, and the website address is there, and it talks about all the things that I talked about today. So the key policy messages, in other words, the background to all this, what you might do yourselves to check your starting point or where you are currently for functional skills. Develop an effective practice of what you can do to move forward. There's loads and loads of resources on there. There's case studies that might help you, and it tells you about CPD opportunities as well. Now, again, something that we funded with ALP was this. And this is, there's a link to this. They haven't produced loads of these. We don't produce paper copy stuff, it's too expensive. But there's a link to this on that website, and it's called Moving from Key Skills to Functional Skills, and it's a guide, and it's got sort of what we call the 8 steps. There's an 8-step guide, and it talks to the things that I just talked about, like a strategy, raise awareness, skills, all those things. So that's in there. If you want sort of more direct support from ALSIS, we run some practical training events, and there's going to be one in each region, and they're going to cover things like this. So initial and diagnostic assessment, functional skills, learning resources, problem solving, etc. They're regionally throughout June and July. There's an ALSIS booking portal. Do you know if you've all got ALSIS accounts? Yeah, you can use your ALSIS account to pay. If you haven't got an ALSIS account, if you run out of cash in your ALSIS account, you'll have to dump up your own cash. I'm sorry to say that. They're £150 for a full day, £75 for a half day event, and that is when they're happening and where they're happening. So I'm sure there's probably one on there that suits you. Okay. And they're all on the website that I just mentioned. You can book now. They are filling up rather quickly, so if you do want to go, I wouldn't hang about. Okay. And there is more direct support available to you as well. I can't tell you exactly how to book on that at the moment, because we're just finalising the package. But from September, we will be offering 3-day packages of support to providers. Okay, and again, you can use your ALSIS account to contribute to it. And you may have to put some more money to it. We haven't quite finalised the cost yet, but you can use your ALSIS account to pay for it. And what will happen, the offer will be, you'll get somebody that can come into your organisation and talk to you as I have done today. Start and do some action planning with you, look at where you are at the moment, build in some CPD for you, so it's a sort of flexible package, alright, and that's going to be available from September. Other things that you might want to look at, we've got starter kits on the Excellence Gateway as well, and some of the things that I've talked about, the more broader things which apply to maths and English in general, whether it's functional skills or not, things on there on assessment, flexible models of delivery, employability, CPD, etc. Professional development planning, there's a lot of material on there, and we call them starter kits. And the reason we've called them starter kits is because we've tried to, as you all know, there's been loads of resources developed over a number of years. We've tried to bring together what we think are the most useful resources, and they're on the Excellence Gateway as well. Okay. If you want to talk to me or my colleague, the colleague Tricia O'Dowd, she actually leads on the day-to-day delivery stuff, or you can go on the Skills for Life portal on the Excellence Gateway. So I'm conscious I've gone over time a little bit, so I'm quite happy to carry on talking, and I'm quite happy to answer any more questions, but I'll stop at that point. Has anyone got any questions? No? Pardon? All I can say to you, it does sound a bit daunting, but I think most people have got a lot of expertise already. Certainly if you've been delivering key skills, you'll have a load of expertise that you can use. You'll have staff that understand working with learners in vocational situations. You'll have staff that understand teaching maths and English. So all I would say is don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Look at where your strengths are. Look at where your expertise is already. And then decide, well, what else do I need to do? What are the bits that I need to build into that to get to a point where I've got to get to? And the other thing I can give you, which you might find useful, and I brought these with me just in case. You might need to take them and leave them back with you as a starting point.
I think it's just for contractors when they're all, like you say, based further afield. Mm-hmm. The learners are all over the place, yeah. So you can't have one central point to do all the support and things. That's the hard thing. And it's how much more the learner is going to have, as in teacher learning, in respect to key skills, what impact that will have on the programme and the employer.
Yeah.
And I think that's the unknown at the moment. I'm not, you know.
Yeah. In terms of, you were saying about Ofsted.
Yeah.
So they would want to see that because the quality of the key skill, the quality of the learning, they would only be able to see from the scheme of work and where the learning has gone from to, I presume. So if they were at a certain level when they started,
yeah.
And what they've, you know, what they've progressed to, but there will be no. Apart from showing you the material that you taught them and anything that they worked on and, you know, that you could show, you would only have whether they'd passed the test, the scheme of work or whatever. There would be no, you know, here's the portfolio, John, have a look at sort of what we've done, would there?
Well, let's just forget so, about the qualification. Let's put the qualification to one side there for a minute.
Yeah.
If that learner has come to receive college,
yeah.
You've done some sort of assessment of their need,
yeah.
Haven't you?
Yeah.
And that learner has come to you to learn a series of skills,
yes.
To either achieve a qualification or to get a job or whatever. Now, the starting point is where, if I was looking at this from an Ofsted point of view, I'd be saying, okay, receive college, why did you put this learner on this course to start with?
Yeah.
Are they on the right course, and how did you make sure that learner's on the right course?
Yeah.
So you'd be able to show me that learner had gone through some sort of assessment.
Initial assessment.
Yeah,
right. Okay,
you've done all that. So therefore then, that learner has gone on to a learning programme that hopefully is what they need.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came to your organisation, I'd be looking to see, A, whether that learner had actually achieved their, whatever they went to achieve. And I'd be also looking at what learning they'd gone on, wouldn't I? I'd be observing that,
yes.
Learner. So if I had looked at an individual learner or a group of learners and said that they're on a course that required level 2 math skills, okay, I'd be looking to see how that learner was developing those skills.
How would you do that? That's what I just
how would,
you? How would you do it?
Well, I would be observing some of the teaching, wouldn't I, as it had gone on. Or I would look at the groups of learners to see what you were teaching.
So that would be through an issue observed, an actual class going on. This is what I'm just...
Well, normally...
And then you'd observe a class.
I'd have to, yeah, I mean, normally when an Ofsted inspector comes in, then what was I teaching? Really? That's part of the process. Now, they might decide that they will go out onto an employer premises,
yes,
and see that happening. If the majority of the learning is going on the employer's premises. Because at the end of the day, that learner's come to you on a programme to learn skills, and you'll get paid dearly.
Mm-hmm.
So... what I'm looking at is whether that learner is getting what you said they'll get, basically, or what they want. So from that initial assessment, if they've got gaps in maths and English, I'm looking to see how you're teaching them those maths and English skills to enable them to gain the skills they need to pass their vocational course, hope in the workplace or hope in their lives. So I'm going to be looking at that form of experience.
Okay.
So if you've got maths, if you've got learners that have been identified through initial and diagnostic assessment with gaps in their learning, and that's preventing them achieving their vocational qualification, you're going to have learners that don't achieve their frameworks, aren't you? So I would imagine that when before an inspector gets to your organisation, they'll be looking at your retention and achievement rates.
And checking whether they've gone out because of that reason.
Yes, absolutely. Or whether how many have progressed for the learning. So I'd be looking at the profile of learners and say, well, okay, the majority of these learners are in a level 2 programme, which is great. Why have you put them in a level 2 programme? Well, I noticed there's one or two of them here that have got gaps. Perhaps they've been assessed at level 1 in UMC, but they've got some level 2 skills.
Yeah.
What's gone on within that programme to get them up to level 2? And what's gone on from them to progress maybe to further learning?
Okay.
So I'd be looking at the whole
thing.
Yeah.
And it's saying that if we get them at NGL 3 and they've got to do a level 2, we think we wouldn't do them because we think they're setting up to fail, because it's very difficult to jump more than that one level or give them that support.
Yeah, and I think that's another really good point.
You need to raise that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got learners that are coming, and land base is an absolutely typical one, because you've got many learners that have worked on family farms or in family businesses, and their practical skills are exemplary.
I know.
And they could easily pass the practical skills at level 2. But if, as you say, they're coming in at entry 3 or level 1, and they've got to achieve functional skills at level 2, you've got to seriously think, you know, is that feasible within the time you've got? Or, you know, is there a way that you can actually give them additional help to get them up to that level?
Yeah. And that might be okay on a day release programme.
It isn't going to be possible in
the work environment. And we've got a lot of learners in factories and warehouses, and what they're saying is that yes, they have underestimated the amount of time that a learner needs to prepare and do tests. And the actual off-the-job element, although they've been said they need 10 sessions or however many sessions, and it's been decided, if they've got a particular crisis, or Christmas is a complete no-go or whatever, the crisis comes at point of the qualification, and they are not as bothered as we are because they're not working to, achievement rates and success rates and frameworks and whatever. And so they're saying, you have to work around it. So we've had a problem with booking online tests. At one time they'd come into the college to do tests. They won't do that now, so we take that out on laptops. But then it's getting them all uploaded and getting people there to sit the tests and vigilators is a nightmare when you've got sort of 150 people needing to take key skills tests or whatever. So it sort of all multiplies, but it may be that if we could get this in and we raise the entry requirement, because certainly people who are struggling with English, say, because we've got a few people who are English as second language, may not be eligible without doing Skills for Life first, possibly.
Well, I think that's the thing. That's exactly what you need to look at. You need to look at each learner as an individual.
Yeah.
It might be you say to that learner, well, your practical skills are exemplary, and we don't think you have any problem getting through this course, but you do need to raise your skills. And it may be that they'll go and do that in their own time.
Yes, that's
it. Maybe they'll do it in an online way.
Yes.
So I think it's one part and partial of making sure the learner gets the right element of learning, rather than put them on a course that they're set up to really not achieve.
Yeah.
And it's all part of that good and initial diagnostic and advice and guidance to start with.
And then I think there's some people who are on national programmes who really do feel that the initial assessment is a little bit below them. I know when they do it, and they would probably be able to do most of the functional skills straight away, so they could work to
that level.
I
think that's another really good point, because that is why you start. I'll carry on. No, thank you. I'm sorry, I could go on all night.
It's been really useful, thank you.
No problem.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Thank you.
If you want, ignore your around.
I do. I've got your details.
One of the things you raised there goes back to your earlier on about getting your new staff, perhaps getting your new staff to do the functional skills test.
Mm.
The reason why I say that is because if they do, they'll realise what what level the learners are working at. And if they've done, if the learner comes out of the initial and diagnostic assessment, it doesn't quite feel right, what they can start to do is say, well, that learner is working at that level, and yet their diagnostic assessment has put them lower than that. So they'll have a feel for whether that learner is working at that level when they're actually teaching them.
Mm-hmm.
So that is not the be-all and end-all, is that assessment. It's an ongoing process whereby the tutors are continually updating their learning plans and saying, well, you know, this learner's gaining the skills, they are working at that level.
Mm-hmm.
So don't see that as the be-all and end-all.
No.
It's an indicator.
Just an indicator.
It's a starting point, yeah.
That's very interesting, thank you.
No problem.
Definitely we'll be in touch. I'm sure. It was quite timely, it being part of today, because
thank you both very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.